From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have a lot on the agenda today. This hour, we are joined by Admiral James Stavridis, the 16th Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. Kyle Coulihan, a fantastic singer, very patriotic man, whose song that is just really red, white, and blue has now gone viral. He's going to talk about what went into it. Former Auburn football player, country music sensation, great writer. But before we get started with our first guest, Walter Russell Mead, a scholar at the Hudson Institute, Wall Street Journal columnist, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
They have moved one of their elite divisions out of Gaza into the operational area into the north. They have not mobilized reserves for that particular mission. If they were going to do a large-scale ground assault, which likely would need to be taken, they would use reserves, but they could start with a surprise tactical move with the forces they have. But certainly, I think they're of the mindset that this operation has to be done.
Yes, that is General Jack Keane a short time ago. Would all-out war with Hezbollah be in the interest of Israel? It seems that's where it's all heading, and I believe it's the only answer for the country that will have an even more formidable foe with each passing year on their northern border.
Number two.
In San Diego, we had an exponential increase in significant interest aliens. These are aliens with significant ties to terrorism. At the time, I was told I could not release any information on this increase in SIAs. The administration was trying to convince the public there was no threat at the border.
That's Aaron Heidke. He was former head of Border Patrol, just finally telling the truth now that he's out, exposed. This whistleblower reveals what he really knew. The administration is pushing Border Patrol to not record terrorists breaching our border, as Harris claims once again she's going to seal the border that she opened.
Number one.
I'm a gun owner. Tim Walz is a gun.
I did not know that.
If somebody and I thought breaks in my house, they're getting shot.
Yes, yes. I hear that. I hear that.
Probably should not have said that.
The most contrived, ridiculous open forum you'll ever see. 2024. Oprah sits down with VP and an hour of drivel, which was 100% substance free. Critics and supporters are demanding she find her way for a real interview with real policies so we have an idea what she would do if she wins the presidency. And we're basically, it's a coin flip at this hour. Nobody has really any idea where it's going, but everyone agrees it is extremely close. One thing is clear. Whoever becomes president next is going to have extreme challenges like we haven't seen maybe since FDR and Harry Truman. Joining us now to discuss it is Walter Russell Mead, scholar at the Hudson Institute, Wall Street Journal columnist. He's a great column out now, which talks about how the U.S. shrugs and World War III approaches. Walter, welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's great to be here, Brian.
Walter, what a titanic task taking on the challenges right now and where we're heading. Are we solving any problems or things seem to be getting worse?
Now, you can look all the way around the world, and what you see is whether you look at the Middle East or you look at Asia and the Indo-Pacific or whether you look at Ukraine, everywhere you look, you can see the problems getting worse. And you add the Western Hemisphere to that.
How do you, if you look at the Western Hemisphere, for example, in Central and South America, the emergence of China, the chaos in Venezuela, we have no idea, Cuba, where that country is heading, where that island nation is heading. And then you have this no limits partnership between China and Russia. So this the Axis power seems to be reforming.
Exactly. And in my column, I cited this bipartisan commission appointed by Democrats and Republicans on the House and Senate Armed Services Committee that did an exhaustive study of the threats facing the country and of the resources we have, and concluded that World War III we're closer than to great power war since 1945, and the United States military is not ready.
And there seems to be no urgency or alarm that recruiting is down, that spending is off, that our Navy's not getting the care, but yet we're strung out all over. For example, this weekend I'm seeing the Philippines, seeing the ramming of these Philippine ships by the Chinese Navy and the Coast Guard. Do you know we're treaty obligated to defend the Philippines? Are we going to?
The question in some ways is, can we? because for 25 years, we've neglected investment in our armed services, really since the end of the Cold War. We sort of said, ah, it's permanent peace. We never have to worry again. And now we face, now the bill is coming due.
We don't really, I mean, ever since 9/11, I feel like we pretty much knew that there were going to be challenges. We had a different type of force then, and people were motivated after the attacks on 9/11. It doesn't seem like there's any urgency to get recruiting up and the quality of our soldiers up. And I'm not sure that our allies are up to the task either. Is there any sense that Europe understands the challenges and what's taking place?
Well, you know, some European countries do. In general, the closer you are to Russia, the more worried you are. But what I worry about, for example, is in the Middle East, where we have allies like Israel and Saudi Arabia and the Emirates who are alert to the danger and would like to do something. The U.S. doesn't seem to be backing them enough.
Why is that? I mean, it's not like there isn't people with experience there. I mean, what's going on?
Well, I think there's still this hope that we can somehow avoid a U.S.-Iran confrontation. You know, the same thing that had been animating the Obama administration with the JCPOA, that somehow it's the path of trying to work out some kind of a deal with Iran is a safer, easier path than the path of trying to deal with Iran. And I think over and over again, we've seen that basically that's not how it works. But so far, we're not seeing any sign that the administration is really pivoting toward reality in the Middle East.
All right, so let's keep it in the Middle East for a second. Sometimes, you know, you look at the Middle East and we've learned for years, it's so complicated, it's so complicated. This is really not. If you look at the problems, the Houthi rebels, Hezbollah, Hamas, if you look at some of the militias inside Iraq, they're all financed directly and supplied by Iran. And Iran is the problem. And it seems for the first time in a long time, almost everybody realizes it, that Israel is not the problem.
Yeah, it's funny. Even administration officials working on trying to negotiate some kind of ceasefire between Israel and Hamas have now, you know, are now telling people, okay, well, the problem isn't Israel. The problem is Hamas. You look at the Houthis. It is astonishing to me that a tiny, militarily weak rebel group has been able to shut down shipping or, you know, interfere significantly with shipping in the Red Sea, which is a vital trade route of the world. And to Russia and to China, forget to Iran, America and our allies are either unwillingness or inability to take the steps needed to open that. It's a huge message to China about what we might do in the South China Sea if China were to attack Taiwan. It's a message to Russia about, do we mean it when we say things to Putin like don't? And we're undercutting ourselves and the credibility of our deterrence, which frankly makes war more likely.
Right. And how much damage was done by the way we pulled out of Afghanistan and our allies cut off at the knees, left behind?
Well, this is exactly right. And it's a string that goes back a long way. There are a lot of people out there who think the Americans are the world's best ally until you actually need an ally. And at the moment when you're in real trouble, that's when the Americans walk away.
So this study, I mean, I'll just to finish this off before we get the overview, in Ukraine, critics, a lot of them Republicans, say, you know what, this is not our problem. We can't get involved in another regional conflict. Ukraine and Russia have this history together. What's the big deal? I see it as a huge deal, and I see it as a huge message. Now, Russia's lost close to 1 million men dead or injured and they've embarrassed themselves by the way they perform to a degree. But Ukraine, as you say here, is basically bleeding out. As much as they're fighting, they don't have the manpower to continue this, right?
That's right. Ukraine, at the end of the day, is a smaller country with a smaller economy than Russia. In some ways, it's a little bit like the South in the U.S. Civil War. You know, it's the smaller country, and it is fighting a war of attrition, in part because we in the U.S. haven't given them enough of the weapons that they needed early on. We dribbled the aid out little by little by little, which keeps them fighting, but also means they have no real chance of winning. And that message, again, to people in Ukraine and to people around the rest of the world is a pretty frightening message.
It is, because we then give them the weapons and we slow walk them. Then we have Congress wrestle about it. When they finally get the weapons, we say, yeah, but you can't hit certain areas. So we restrict them. So it's nuts. Yeah. It's like, what kind of message is that?
It reminds me a little bit of Lyndon Johnson during the Vietnam War, sitting in the Oval Office and sort of one by one agonizingly approving this target or that target. This is a way to get into the worst of all possible situations where you're in a war and your prestige is committed, but you're not going to win. And that is, you know, this kind of endless quest for perfection and this constant fear of Putin. Plus, let's not forget, there are a lot of places where if we were serious about Putin, we could have made some real trouble for him. For example, in Africa, where the Wagner Group, which is sending Putin oil and money and all kinds of things, has been able to take over a big chunk of Africa. And the U.S. has essentially done nothing, while Russia has vastly expanded power in northern Africa. This is, again, it's not just that the weakness strengthens Putin and gives him resources to build his support at home. It's the message that it sends to places like China and to places like Iran, that the U.S. is kind of, you know, we're kind of over. We're trying to live in a quiet retirement center.
And these are decisions, and we could change them quickly because Russia has a very weak economy. They don't have productive people. They're a dwindling society down to 140 million. China's economically vulnerable, more vulnerable than a lot of time, maybe that I can remember over the last 20 years. So it's not like they came out of COVID strong. They didn't. They still have not recovered.
That's right. And we've also got allies and potential allies around the world that if they saw the U.S. providing real leadership and real security would rally to us. The Japanese have doubled their defense spending. It's still too low, but they've made a big change. They are working with some of their neighbors like the Philippines. We need to be encouraging and building on the success that some of our allies are having. And we need to be showing the bad guys that we mean business.
So, Walter, overall, you know a lot of this stuff already. You probably thought of it. But what's revealed in this report that caught you by surprise?
Well, I think it's that some people who had access to all the, you know, all the secret squirrel classified information in the bureaucracy, who were able to interview Pentagon officials in great detail and able to put the whole big picture together, came up with such a sort of shockingly clear statement about the inadequacies of America's defense posture. And used language that is, you know, congressional reports are normally kind of boring. But let me tell you, if our listeners go to that report on the Commission on National Defense Strategy, you can find it on the internet, they will see very, very stark warnings from a bipartisan panel.
So it's interesting. People talked about Eisenhower, and he says, look out for the military-industrial complex. I want to look out for that. It's all consolidated, and there's no mission. We can't handle the orders coming in. So it's a huge issue. We need expansion.
And we also need reform. They talk about how the Pentagon's processes have gotten very, you know, just so choked with bureaucracy and regulations that even when we try to do something, we often can't do it for years while the other guys are moving quickly. You can go to, if you go to Ukraine, as I've done, to Kyiv and talk to the people, what you find is you know, the Ukrainians are inventing things every day and the Russians are doing counter invention and the arms race in drones and other things. The electronic battlefield is dramatically accelerating. We're still stuck in many cases with kind of, you know, bureaucrats in eye shades looking over the fine print of regulations and slowing things down. We need to have more resources in defense, and we need for our defense system to work much more effectively and on a much faster timetable.
Do you think any true leader would address the American people with some of these conclusions and understand how we have to almost double the defense budget while at the same time looking at reforming the Pentagon to become an efficient machine? Because they moved at a glacier's pace on everything. One thing you learn is these Ukrainians are modifying and making their own drone army cheaply.
Yes, exactly. And again, the thing that I think history will not forgive President Biden for is, where were your fireside chats? When did you use the power of the presidency to lay out clearly for the American people how the world situation has gotten more dangerous, how our military is falling short, how our defenses need to be rebuilt, how our alliances need to be strengthened, and start building the public support for the steps that we need to take?
But Walter, you know why he doesn't do that? He has no faith in the military. The guy has got a history of never trusting the military.
You know, we all come in, you're right, but we all come into office with our different ideas. But in theory, you know, reality should make us rethink a few things. And again, I don't think history is going to be kind to an administration which sat passively. That's how, you know, there's some people in the administration try to do some good things, but where the president provided so little leadership in an era of such great danger.
Well, you did your part. You're telling everyone about it and you're writing about it. Walter Russell Mead, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Right. And the headline tells it all. U.S. shrugs as World War III approaches. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Yeah, welcome back. I mean, some of that stuff that you guys should really, because most people here are passionate about the military, passionate about our defense. You got to really check this out. The national defense, and basically, I'm looking it up now. There's quick one-page stories on it. The National Defense Commission. The Pentagon has insufficient forces, inadequate to face China and Russia, and we're slow to adjust to anything. Now, that is not why. We spend more on our military than China, more on our military than Russia, or at least until this war started. Now they're getting things from everywhere. But our allies aren't. They're not being pushed to do it. And we're not producing weapons and coming up with strategies in a productive way. I know David Petraeus has a column out today in the Wall Street Journal. I find that interesting, that we could learn a lot from the innovation that Ukraine is coming up with in the middle of that war. But when we come back, I want to talk about the incredibly innovative Israeli Defense Force, the IDF, as well as the Mossad, and what they were able to do. Well, with beepers, pagers, with walkie-talkies, and with solar panels, that has Hezbollah scrambling for any way to communicate. You're listening to Brian Kilmeade Show, and don't forget, One Nation coming up Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
They have moved one of their elite divisions out of Gaza into the operational area into the north. They have not mobilized reserves for that particular mission. If they were going to do a large-scale ground assault, which likely would need to be taken, they would use reserves, but they could start with a surprise tactical move with the forces they have. But certainly, I think they're of the mindset that this operation has to be done.
They are. General Jack Keane on why they're putting so much emphasis on the northern border before finishing up Gaza and the southern border. Number one, it started as a preemptive strike, taking out two of their leaders with no cyber footprint. One of them dates all the way back to our Marine bombings in the 1980s. And then rather than wait to be hit again, they have managed to infiltrate the supply chain of beeper deliveries. Yes, beeper deliveries used because they didn't trust their cell phones not to be tracked. They thought the Israelis were on top of that. So Hezbollah has handed out these beepers for communication purposes. Turns out there were at least two drops of explosives in there and a switch, at which time when called, it would heat up and explode. It did. Thousands were wounded. At least 40 are dead. And now, after that, walkie-talkies blew up and solar panels. What is next? Nasrallah comes out, who runs Hezbollah, and says this is essentially a declaration of war. But is it? Last night, the second biggest aerial attack on Lebanon, targeting Hezbollah, took place by the IDF. So what's going on here? Is it in their best interest to have war in the north to try to get about 60 to 80,000 Israelis back in their homes and more? Admiral James Tarvidas joins us now, author of a new book, The Restless Wave, a novel of the United States Navy. Admiral, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Brian. Let's pick it up right there with why. And I think the big why is not only the kind of overarching terrorist threat from Hezbollah to the north and not only Iranian involvement, but there's a very practical why, and you hit on it. It's 60, 80, maybe as many as 100,000 Israelis have been pushed out of their homes and are effectively refugees in their own country. And, you know, for an American audience, population-adjusted basis, picture a world in which 3.5 million Americans get pushed out of their homes, maybe on a border somewhere with Canada, and they need to get back into their homes. So that's why the Israeli Defense Forces are going at this. And as always, I think General Keane's analysis is quite keen, if you'll allow me to use a really bad pun. It is spot on that what you're seeing is the active duty segment push up there. That tells me that they're going to do some level of incursion, but they're not going to march to Beirut and really pull out Hezbollah by its roots. I think in the end here, this is going to be a somewhat limited operation to get Israelis back into their homes and then protect that border.
How much disarray are they in? There's tens of thousands of Hezbollah fighters. I think 45,000, they got reserves. They're not all in Lebanon, but man, you're targeting military members that would be compelled to hold a beeper to stay in communication with this military arm. That's as targeted and as you can get, it seems. And yep. I'm wondering, you might, after these 2 days, to have them really off their axis, is this the time to make a major move? And was last night the major move, taking out 1,000 launchers?
Yeah, let's start with the pagers, the beepers. These are the devices that the Hezbollah terrorists have been forced to go to, as you said, Brian. What's striking to me is it's a tactical move that is actually taking out 3,000, maybe 10% of their real forces. It's an operational move, you know, across the whole theater of operations, because it shuts down their communications. They're terrified to even turn on a cell phone. Now they can't use their pagers. They can't even use their walkie-talkies. So they're down to, I don't know, carrier pigeons and handwritten notes. And then so it's operational. And then thirdly, it's a strategic play that's directed at Iran. And what they're saying to the Iranians is, look what I just did up there in Lebanon. How many pagers do you guys have? How many cell phones do you have? How many laptops? Do you think maybe we're in your supply chain as well? That's a strategic signal. So I think it's playing on all three levels. And final thought, Brian, I believe that what is happening to the north is not going to turn into a massive big move. I think we're going to see a pause here after the airstrikes, maybe a little bit of ground operations. Again, this is going to be about getting Israelis safely back into their homes inside the state of Israel, not about carving territory out of Lebanon.
So I want to get you to an idea of what some lawmakers are saying. Here is AOC, and I know you get a lot of your military a lot of times you take your column from some of her comments and speeches, so this will be familiar to you. So here's the congresswoman speaking out.
Currently, U.S. Department of Defense guidelines actually explicitly prohibits the use of booby traps, and they define booby traps as non-combatant devices, cell phones, things like that, being used and have explosives hidden in them. There are rules of war. And just because war engages doesn't mean that we abandon the rules of war.
Are we in danger of violating our booby trap laws?
I'll put it very simply. When in a war, and Israel and Hezbollah are in a war, and your opponent is using communications devices, those are legitimate military targets, full stop.
So there's a couple of things I have to ask you. First off, on the proposed deal in Gaza, this is what the Jerusalem Post says. There's a forget about the phases. Let's just do it. Here are the number of prisoners. Get them out. Here are all the hostages and their, the ones that didn't survive, bodies, remains. Get them out. Then the IDF pulls out. An international force goes in, and the leadership gets to leave, including Sinwar, goes to a third country. On the surface, if I just handed you that and I said, Admiral, from what you know about both sides, do you think this is a potential for an agreement? What would you say?
I would say no, on two bases. One is it simply allows Hamas to reconstitute, and I didn't hear anything in there about controlling the borders of Gaza. And I think Israel is going to have to maintain that. Number two, Sinwar. I just don't see how at this stage the Israelis can let him walk away. I think, Brian, it's a reasonable conversation to have in the context of the horrible plight of these hostages. But the best negotiators in the world have been working on this for 7 months now. They haven't arrived at a solution, and it's because of the two sticking points I just pointed out.
So they do a National Defense Commission to find out the state of our military and the challenges that we have. And they point out, Walter Russell Mead reads it and says, we have never been closer to World War III, and we are not ready for the challenge. Admiral, very few people know what we have and don't have in our military arsenal more than you do. Are you as worried as anyone who reads this 100-plus page commission is, seems to be?
I am worried, but I'll take issue a bit with the columnist you mentioned. I think we were much closer to World War III, for example, in the 1960s during the Cuban Missile Crisis. I think that's indisputably accurate. I think at several points during the Cold War, we came closer to World War III. But I don't want to split hairs here. We are definitely in the most dangerous period since the end of the Cold War back in the 1990s, say. So that's a pretty significant place to be. Are we prepared for it? I think, as always, with a military of our size and scale, there are some things that are frankly superb and ready to go. Our nuclear forces, for example, and that constitutes the real deterrence against an apocalyptic event. Those are ready to go. On the other hand, you know the Admiral's going to say this, our Navy is not where it should be. We only have 270 ships. China has 360. They are building roughly double the number of ships we are. And that's one example of an area where we simply have to put more resources in the face of a threat with China. So it's a mixed picture, right, Brian.
So, Admiral, tell me about the restless wave about to come out.
It's a novel set in the early 1940s, and it's at the start of World War II. And I wrote it, Brian, because I wanted to gather those echoes of what a great power war in the Pacific would actually be like. You know, we don't have to imagine what a war between the U.S. and China would look like. The war between the U.S. and Japan in the 1940s gives us a pretty good idea. The book, Brian, is also a love triangle about two young naval officers, a beautiful Hawaiian woman, and you see that collision of the personal and war. And then finally, Brian, here's the little Easter egg inside the book. It's loosely based on Dante's Inferno, because World War II in the Pacific really was that. It was an inferno. So it pulls all those threads together, and it comes out just in a couple of weeks.
Admiral James Tarvidas, called The Restless Wave, a novel of the United States Navy. Admiral, thanks so much. I'll see you soon.
Okay, Brian. Talk soon. Bye-bye.
We just talked to two very patriotic people, Walter Russell Meade, Wall Street Journal, and Admiral James Tarvidas. Fights for this country, as did generations of his family. Kyle Coulihan's dad fought for this country. He did something also extremely important, wrote one of the most patriotic, uplifting, motivational songs you will hear, and he's become a viral sensation off social media because he just wanted to get the word out about how he feels, and he's a brilliant songwriter. He's coming in, just left Fox and Friends, is coming in to give us some quality time here, and who knows, maybe play a little of that song. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. Kyle's next.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I still believe in the 4th of July. I still believe in an eye for an eye. Freedom's worth dying for. There's only one God, and that's the good Lord. I still believe in the USA. I still believe in everything homemade. Yes, I'm a giving up, but I'm holding on the best I can. Cause I'm still proud to be an American.
So there you go. That is the voice of Kyle Coulihan. He wrote the song. He's singing the song. He's in studio. The name of the song is Still Proud to Be an American. I'm just like everyone else. I'm on Instagram. I'm looking at this, and I said, okay, this guy's a big guy. He's got something to say. I listened to him. He's like, I just want you to hear this song. If you like it and download it. And almost everybody is. Kyle, welcome.
Thanks, man.
What kind of response did you get? I discovered, just like anyone else, just going scrolling through Instagram.
That's so
what
great.
Kind of response did you get?
A phenomenal, phenomenal response. I think we had the first couple weeks like 30 million views.
30 million views. Yeah. How many downloads?
I would probably say close to 100,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were prompted to write this song. Why?
Well, I just wanted to give back to my country. My dad was in the Air Force for 22 years. My granddad, 34, Air Force, outstanding military careers. And I... there was a part of me that felt like I was missing, like I needed to give back. And I said, well, I'm a songwriter. Let's do that. And so and I felt that, you know, I turn the TV on. I see kids burning the flag, and I see our country that isn't what it was.
Statues being ripped down.
Yeah, awful, awful stuff. And it's like, I got to do this. I got to do it. And in the music industry, that's a really hard thing to do because there's a lot of left in the industry.
Even in country music.
Almost canceled for doing it.
Right.
And I said, I'm going to do it anyways because I feel like this is what God was calling me to do.
So. You were playing football at Auburn.
Yeah.
Always loved music.
Yep.
When did you realize you were going to be a musician? Did you always know?
When I moved to college, I would say my freshman year, I started really writing, like, for real songs. Like, I'd always wrote ditties and stuff like that. And so I would say probably my freshman year of college, I was like, okay, there's something here.
Kind of got recruited to play football and kind of got recruited to go to Nashville.
I did, yeah.
To being wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. I lucked into meeting this guy named Chips Moman, who he produced The Highwaymen, Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley, Aretha Franklin. And he came out of retirement to bring me to Nashville to start recording. So there was this, you know, do I finish football? Do I move to Nashville to do music? So it was.
Did you like your music or like your voice?
Both. Yeah. My writing and my
voice.
He
loves that you could write.
Yeah. He loved that I could write, but my voice, he really loved my voice.
So you go back and forth, you finish college and you go.
Yeah.
But one thing about it, I was shocked, and I know this for a fact that you're right, that country music is not this, it's not what Charlie Daniels had.
Right.
You know, they exactly. aren't Way to the Right. They aren't Red, White, and Blue like they used to. They're very Hollywood.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're not. No. You're writing these great songs. No. Did you get pushback? Like John Rich has gotten, a lot of people don't want to hear his songs now.
Yeah.
And other people will take a bullet for him because they think he's so valuable to the country, like I do.
Absolutely. I mean, hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of hate comments I mean, death threats, everything. Like, you know, you suck, you're horrible. I don't ever want to hear this song again. But the upside is that most of America on the right side wanted to hear this stuff. So, you know, I got both of them coming at me.
Yeah, I don't believe boys should be in women's locker rooms.
No.
This is a lot of our talking points you put to music.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So you wrote another song.
Yes.
And it is?
It's called Jesus and Trump.
Jesus and Trump. Yeah. Can we hear a little
bit? Absolutely, yeah. This one's a little
more. This is live in studio. This is not a recording studio, so just know.
Yeah.
Kyle recorded, we sound a lot crisper.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so this one's a little funny. This one's got some comedic value to it. Okay. But, let's see. So, voting blue at this point is basically murder. They're going to keep the gates wide open down at the Mexican border while the drugs and the drug lords just wave as they roll on by. They're going to send all our money to some other country somewhere just to save somebody else's poor little polar bear because their weather changed a couple of degrees, and that makes sense, right? And LGBTQRST sounds a whole lot like Chinese math to me, man. You're either born a boy or a girl, and definitely not a damn cat. So hold on to your Bibles, your guns, and your cash, because Jesus and Trump coming back.
Love it. There you go. When can we get, how can we download that?
So it just came out today.
Today?
Yeah, today. You can get it on Apple Music, iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you listen to music, you can get it.
And there. TikTok flagged it. Why?
Yeah, they called it hate speech, and it was saying that it was unfair.
You feel great because not only you'll give up some money and some fame for doing things that you care about,
absolutely.
And that's this country.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely, 100%. We need it. We need people standing up. We need people. I think that people out there need to, anybody can be a patriot,
right?
And everybody has a voice, you know.
Kyle Coolahan. Follow him wherever you can. Download all the music you are able to. Last name, Coulahan. Kyle, great to see you. Congratulations on everything.
Absolutely.
And if you don't mind, we're going to listen to your song on the way out.
Come on.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from 48th and 6th, right in Midtown Manhattan, where 75% of the crime is from illegal immigrants. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. It's been a real busy week. This hour, we're going to be joined by Hillel Nour for the first time. She's the executive director of UN Watch. UN's going to all come to town in New York City on the East Side, I don't know, starting tonight. So I want to talk about what they want to accomplish, too. And isn't it interesting? I mean, do you really believe we're almost a year since October 7th? Are they really going to continue to condemn Israel? The answer might be yes. We'll talk about that. Congressman Tony Gonzalez is standing by. One of the most impactful congressmen who's already served this country in the military. You want to know about the reality on the border as opposed to what was spouted out last night with Oprah and the vice president of the United States? We'll get the reality from the Texas congressman. But first, Big Three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
They have moved one of their elite divisions out of Gaza into the operational area into the north. They have not mobilized reserves for that particular mission. If they were going to do a large-scale ground assault, which likely would need to be taken, they would use reserves, but they could start with a surprise tactical move with the forces they have. But certainly, I think they're of the mindset that this operation has to be done.
Yep, that is General Jack Keane with me a couple hours ago. Would all-out war with Hezbollah be in the interest of Israel? It seems that's where it's all heading, and I believe it's the only answer for the country. We will discuss.
Number two.
In San Diego, we had an exponential increase in significant interest aliens. These are aliens with significant ties to terrorism. At the time, I was told I could not release any information on this increase in SIAs. The administration was trying to convince the public there was no threat at the border.
Wow, that is Aaron Heineke, an official with the Border Patrol that witnessed being told not to record terrorists coming across the border. A whistleblower extraordinaire. The administration is pushing Border Patrol to not record terrorists breaching the border. How is that in our best interest? And the vice president claims once again she's going to seal the border that she opened.
Number one.
I'm a gun owner. Tim Walz is a gun.
I did not know that.
If somebody and I that breaks was in my house, they're getting shot.
Yes, yes. I hear that.
Probably should not have said that.
Yeah, pretend like that was something not planned. 2024, Oprah sits down with the VP and an hour of drivel, which was 100% substance-free. Critics and supporters are seem to be united in demanding for her to find a way to a real interview, to talk about real policies instead of filibustering everything she's asked. Congressman, welcome back. Your thoughts about this, the candidacy, which is Kamala Harris. We have nothing to debate. She doesn't say anything.
It's really sad, actually, Brian, because, you know, here she is, the current vice president. You know, she can do things today. And clearly, you know, Joe Biden is incapacitated. I mean, so there's things that she could do today that could highlight the fact that she can lead this country. But she not only isn't, she can't. And the border is a prime example, but so is the economy. You know, so the safety around the country has gone in the tank. I mean, it's serious issue after serious issue, our debt, and they won't have any conversations at all. It's scary. It's upsetting. And it's such a big reason why not only do House Republicans have to win, but we have to make sure Donald Trump wins in November.
For the longest time, people of Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and California were dealing with the border problem. If you're not there, it's not your problem. Now it is truly a 50-state problem. First, really, when Martha's Vineyard couldn't handle 40, that's when people realize, well, what are we complaining about then? And now it's our problem. And then you see we have over 200,000 have come through New York. Tens of thousands in Chicago airports and shelters and schools. And we see the problems in small towns like Springfield and Aurora. I want you to hear Kamala Harris asked about this. Tell me if this is a policy you can get behind. This is her talking about the border. Cut three.
What would be specific steps to strengthening the border?
So it's a wonderful and important question. You know, my background was as a prosecutor, and I was also the elected attorney general for 2 terms of a border state. So this is not a theoretical issue for me. This is something I've actually worked on. Okay. I have prosecuted transnational criminal organizations for the trafficking of guns, drugs, and human beings. I take very seriously the importance of having a secure border and ensuring the safety of the American people. Sadly, where we are now can be traced most recently back to the fact that when the United States Congress, members of the Congress, including some of the most conservative Republicans, came up with a border security bill.
So to answer Justin's question, now that that bill has gone and hasn't passed, will you reintroduce that?
Absolutely. And when I am elected president of the United States, I will make sure that bill gets to my desk and I will sign it into law.
All right, so she had to be urged to get to the point from Oprah. But your thoughts about what you just heard?
I mean, clearly she's a former senator because she just filibustered the question and you know, no substance whatsoever. Once again, it's not as if she's a candidate. She is the current vice president. There are things that they can do today. Like you mentioned, this isn't a border issue. It isn't a South. It isn't a Texas issue. It isn't a Southern issue. It's all across the country. It is morphed. It is turned into so many different things, whether it's fentanyl, whether it's people getting murdered, whether it's just sheer amount of people consuming resources. And her answer is that let's blame Congress. Like, hey, I'm with you. Look, Congress hasn't done very much this year. But you're the vice president. And you know what? I don't trust a word she says because she's not her actions do not line up. Bottom line is they don't know what to do, Brian. They've never been to the border. She came one time, you know, for a couple hours. They don't care about it. They think it's a political problem and it's not a policy issue. I get it. Congress should pass some piece of legislation. I have ideas. Lots of people have ideas. But as the executive branch, there's things that they can do today to enforce the laws by just deporting people that are here illegally.
Right.
Or let's go after these people that ICE already knows are known criminals, these 10,000 people that are roaming our country. Let's start there. They're doing none of it.
How about, did you like that bipartisan piece of legislation?
I did not. I wouldn't have voted for it. And you know what, Brian? I work with anyone.
I know you do.
People call me once a week. Hey, Tony, I got this great idea on how do we fix the border. And you know what? I my hat goes off to Senator Lankford and Senator Sinema. I literally was on the phone with them three or four times a week as they were navigating through it. The reason I would not support that bill is because it allowed thousands of people to come over illegally before there was an enforcement. The numbers should always be zero, Brian. And if you can't get that piece right, the rest of it, I mean, there's a lot of good pieces in there, but the rest of it, it was dead on arrival. So for them to run, you know, for the Democrats to run on it. It's shameful. And meanwhile, real Americans are getting impacted. I was just out in West Texas. I'll be brief. I was just out in West Texas. Brian, there's a huge rise in oil theft. You have illegal aliens that are stealing oil and gasoline. And in the Permian Basin in West Texas produces nearly 50% of our nation's oil. This is a national security issue that not a lot of people are talking about.
How do they do it?
You know what? Two years ago, I'm like, how the heck do you steal oil? And then how do you sell oil after you've stolen it? And you know what? It looks a lot like a legal transaction. They will back up a tanker, a truck into a tanker. They'll siphon off this oil and they'll drive away. And it looks as if every other, you know, there's hundreds of these trucks on the roads out in West Texas. So it's very hard to detect. One of the things that I've been pushing for is not just identifying the problem. There needs to be a federal, state, and local response. And there's a task force, believe it or not. There's an oil theft task force. And so I just dropped a piece of legislation. It's called Combating Oil Theft. And what it does is let's pool all our resources to make sure that these people that are doing this are apprehended, they're thrown behind bars. Let's give federal resources to the local law enforcement officers that are doing this. It's a national security threat.
So do you know Aaron Heidke?
Yes.
Retired chief border patrol agent. Said this in front of Congress, then later followed up. Finally, we have somebody on the record willing to say what we all heard. Listen, cut 23.
In San Diego, we had an exponential increase in significant interest aliens. These are aliens with significant ties to terrorism. Once word was out, the border was far easier to cross. San Diego went to over 100 SIAs in 2022. Well over that in 2023, and even more than that registered this year. These are only the ones we caught. At the time, I was told I could not release any information on this increase in SIAs or mention any of the arrests. The administration was trying to convince the public there was no threat at the border.
What is the impact of that statement?
That was a powerful testimony. And, you know, to have an expert that lives it, that has lived it, you know, his whole career. And it is a statement that I have heard over and over again from my Border Patrol agents, you know, these special interest aliens. That's real. I mean, that's not a made up number. It's not dozens. It's hundreds. We're getting into the near thousands. And so this is a real threat. We saw what happened to Israel on October 7th. Everyone thinks you're perfectly fine until you're not. We can see this train wreck happening a mile away. We have to stop it. The other piece of it too, Brian, it's not only the SIAs. Those are special interest aliens. Those are the people on the watch list. It's all these other people that aren't on a watch list that are terrorizing as well. These Venezuelan gangs, Tren de Agua, TDA, many cases, you know, there is no record of them. There is no Interpol. Does not communicate with Venezuela. So we're just releasing, you know, literally millions of people that we just don't know if they're good or bad actors. And they're proving that, you know, they're terrorizing Americans.
Congressman, I'm talking to Congressman Tony Gonzalez on Homeland Security and Appropriations. We have a guy said that the government told me not to report this. We're not allowed to report it. He went on, cut 24.
Through pressure from the administration, my headquarters became more interested in the fiction that being portrayed in the media and not at all concerned with reality. Each time we asked for help in dealing with a new issue, it fell on deaf ears. At times in San Diego, we had 2,000 or more aliens sitting in between the fences asking to turn themselves in. I was told to move them out of sight of the media.
So this is the vice president in charge of the border, never went to the border, said, and I prosecuted transnational gangs. I looked it up. She did it in 2012 and 2014. What year is it now? 2024. Do you really see? Exactly. So whatever she was doing in California, she's doing in California. There was no interest in kicking these people out. To act like she's tough on the border is probably greater fiction than Aaron was just speaking about in front of Congress. So this is a scary situation. They're trying to continue this process. They're not going to fix the border.
They'll make it worse. You know, this is what they want. This is exactly what they want. They gave up on legal immigration reform very early on in the administration, and they just doubled down on illegal immigration. And what it boils down to is people do not trust this administration because they're not transparent. You know, they won't do interviews. You can't get a camera in any of these facilities. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've shared video that I took. You know, oftentimes with Bill Malusian or Fox or, you know, other Griff Jenkins does another great job on the border. And I will share these videos of, does this look orderly and humane? There was one time in El Paso, there were 5,000 people in a facility that can hold 1,000. I mean, it's just they don't care. They don't care about the human suffering. They don't care about the human trafficking, the children. They don't care about the Americans that are dying. They're just trying to lie to us. I think why it's so important that Republicans starting in the House. And this is the other thing, too, right? Like, we got to stop thinking we're going to ride. We got to stop trying to ride President Trump's coattails. House Republicans need to lead from the ground up, and we need to help him. We need to help the top of the ticket by highlighting the truth while this administration just continues to lie.
But Congressman, you're in the record saying you think the Republicans are going to lose the House.
Yeah, let me tell you that, Brian. So I've retired a Navy Master Chief. You know, Tim Walz likes to lie to people and say he was the highest enlisted service member to ever serve in Congress. That's a lie. I am. I'm a retired Navy Master Chief. And as a Master Chief, my job isn't to be a cheerleader, right? Other people, that's other people's jobs, and that's okay. My job is to always check the organization and to go, if we're going down the wrong way, we need to check ourselves before we lose. And you know, I did that interview. I said, look, if we don't do the following things, and I spoke on it for an hour, you know, talk about the economy, talk about safety, talk about our solutions to border security, we will lose the House majority. And so it's about, we're a team. And it's about, we have to go to work. On the other side, the Democrats, they're lying. They're raising more money than ever. They're trying to, like, don't listen to anything that we've said or done. Listen to what we're promising you. And House, we have to take this very serious. This election is going to be close. I suspect the House, the Senate, the presidency. And once again, we win by House members overperforming. That's why I'm going to Pennsylvania later today with Rob Bresnahan out in Pennsylvania 8. Next week, I'll be in Oregon and Arizona. Juan Ciscomani. If President Trump can win Arizona, the map changes. And I think we do that by winning over Hispanic Americans. That's the key. They're the demographic that will vote for Trump and also and grow the majority in there.
I have a theory. If you actually want to help the border, prove that the Hispanic vote isn't automatic if they cross the border.
They believe
that by letting the veil open, let everybody in, they'll get the Hispanic vote. They're getting less every year. We have 20 seconds left, Congressman. What do you think of that?
I think you're exactly right. That's the key. And you know what? You can't show up and speak a little bit of broken Spanish and, you know what I mean, and bring some mariachis and like say, oh, Hispanic outreach. I've won 7 very tough elections by showing up to places no one else goes, knocking on their doors and leading with our conservative values of family, faith, and our country.
Right. And you serve in the military, too. And they tried to primary you and you won. Congressman, keep fighting. And I know you're speaking reality. Whatever it is, you got 30 seats roughly contending for this for the House majority. Thanks so much. Best of luck.
Thanks, Brian.
You got it. 1-866-408-7669. So glad you're here. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think it was unlikely Robinson was going to win in the first place. He was already behind. Obviously, this doesn't help. and I don't want to overstate it, but I think Republicans had already kind of internalized this was a very steep battle. The Trump people feel very good about their operation in North Carolina. I find it unlikely that this will flow uphill. Normally in politics, it flows downhill. This, I don't think it will flow uphill on Trump.
Because usually when you vote for the ticket, it's top down. What they're talking about is Mark Robinson. He denies it, but they say there's some links to his identity doing vile things on Pornhub. Not usually a positive ever when you're even on Pornhub or if you have a password on Pornhub, especially if you want to be governor. It was an uphill battle for him. He said some controversial things. He's been on our show. President Trump loves him, thought he was Martin Luther King Jr. on steroids. But you probably would have, in retrospect, been able to do with a little bit more of a conventional candidate, to say the least. If the CNN report's true, his candidacy is dead on arrival. He says it's not. We'll see how it goes. I don't know how either side ends up proving it's them or not them. The theory is in North Carolina that's so close. Are there going to be an effective way to tie all candidates in North Carolina, like Trump, to Mark Robinson? And being that they're on the record saying that, those ads will not look great for Trump. But he wanted to back him instead of, I think it was Mark Walker that wanted to run. So we'll see how that goes, and we'll see what happens. It's amazing how CNN is so determined to blow up these Republicans, they might have got one here. Listen to Brian Kilmeade show.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we're back, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. And keep in mind, too, I'm going to be in Peekskill, New York, coming up on October 20th, 7 o'clock on a Sunday. If you love patriotism, history, liberty, and laughs, on stage, unscripted, VIP opportunities remain. It's a show like no other. It's developed over the last 2 years. I think you'll love it. So go to BrianKilmeade.com. I'll meet you in person, Peekskill, New York. First things first, next week is going to be General Assembly Week, where New York is flooded with international important people. Khalil Noyor is the executive director of UN Watch and joins us now. Khalil, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
First off, what do we expect next week? It's going to be all about Israel, isn't it?
Well, it'll certainly be about Israel. And let's keep in mind the UN General Assembly annual opening is really a catwalk for dictators. You know, Erdogan from Turkey will be there. The new president of Iran will be there. It's going to be one dictator after another. The UN is rolling out the red carpet. Keep in mind that the UN's Human Rights Council is composed of Cuba, police state, Qatar sponsoring the Taliban and Hamas, the Chinese communist regime, Sudan, Eritrea, Algeria. That's the Human Rights Council. Keep in mind the UN, their disarmament chair several months ago was the Islamic regime of Iran. China's on the Human Rights Council, as I said, and Saudi Arabia was made chair of their Women's Rights Commission. The UN has turned into a sad joke, and it's tragic because millions of victims will pay the price.
I mean, they just do this on a rotation, or they try to do the most farcical thing, period?
A few of the bodies, like the disarmament body, was rotation, although Iran was elected to several other disarmament posts at the General Assembly this year. The Human Rights Council, that's an election. So Xi Jinping's Chinese communist dictatorship oppressing 1.5 billion people, that's a fifth of humanity, denied any freedoms of speech, religion, assembly. They're elected to the Human Rights Council, and Saudi Arabia was elected to chair the UN Women's Rights Commission. It's hard to imagine that it's true and that it's not made up, but that's the reality.
So we have Israel now coming up on October 7th. Will there be even any sense of respect for what the Israelis experienced on October 7th? Or are they going to focus on how they feel the Israelis are fighting this war?
Look, I got to tell you, I'm someone heading the group UN Watch. We're calling out the UN for its abuses. We often condemn the UN when they're silent. And I got to tell you, the only worse thing than the UN being silent, unfortunately, too often, is when the UN speaks. So on October 7th, it's not clear whether it'll be worse if the UN is silent about what happened or if they speak. Because I'll tell you, what the UN has been saying just in the past few days is unbelievable. The head of the United Nations Secretariat, the Secretary General Guterres, condemned Israel for a brilliant, pinpointed attack on Hezbollah terrorists. These are brutal terrorists who fired 8,500 missiles and deadly drones at Israel since October 8th, the day after the Hamas massacre. Hezbollah joined in, has been attacking Israel, including today. And Israel did a brilliant counterterrorism operation, hitting Hezbollah terrorists in their pockets with the pagers that the terrorist organization distributed to their operatives. It is unprecedented in warfare, as military experts around the world have acknowledged. It's a brilliant tactical move, targeted. Yes, there may have been a few innocent people who were killed. That's collateral damage. It happens in every war, but I can't think of a more pinpointed operation. And yet the UN Secretary General is condemning Israel. The UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk in Geneva is condemning Israel, and a lineup of UN so-called experts like the Hamas apologist Francesca Albanese are condemning Israel. It's completely Orwellian. You know, when bin Laden was killed, Ban Ki-moon, to his credit, said, "I am very much relieved that a mastermind of terrorism was killed." But when it comes to Israel, it's the complete opposite. The UN has become apologists for the Hamas and the Hezbollah terrorist organizations.
Who do they look to as the Palestinian Authority, being that the Palestinians have no authority?
Well, look, Mahmoud Abbas is the head of the so-called Palestinian Authority.
Right.
He's someone who just a year or two ago said the Jews brought the Holocaust upon themselves. And this is a recurring theme. He's the moderate, right? In the Palestinian territories, or Judea, Samaria, and Gaza, it's Hamas is considered the militant terrorist group, and by some, a militant group, and Fatah, the PLO, the PA, is considered the moderate. The head of the moderate Palestinian Authority is a notorious Holocaust denier. He was condemned for his anti-Semitic remarks several times, even by the Europeans. And he's the moderate, and the UN has rewarded him. In the past year, the UN upgraded the status of the Palestinians at the UN. They're now sitting among the member states. The UN should not be rewarding giving the trappings of statehood to an entity that endorses terrorism. The PA embraced what Hamas has done. There is not only terrorism under Hamas in Gaza, but in cities under PA authority, like Jenin, there are terrorists building tunnels with RPGs. It's sort of a full-on Gaza 2.0 in the West Bank, where the PA supposedly has authority. They're not exercising it, and the UN is now rewarding them.
It's crazy to think. Ukraine is the other major story. The Russians clearly invading, clearly the aggressor, but they got some friends. They got China, North Korea, they got Iran, and of course, some others in the region who are basically satellites of them. Your thoughts, like Belarus, your thoughts about how Zelensky is going to be received?
Well, the UN has a full spectrum of countries there. The Western states have rallied rightly around Zelensky and Ukraine. Russia committed aggression in invading Ukraine. They've been pummeling innocent civilians indiscriminately, bombing cities. It's complete aggression, violation of international law. And the free world should stand with Zelensky and Ukraine and to do much more than they've done to date. I agree with Garry Kasparov, the former chess grandmaster and one of the leading spokespersons in calling out Putin. And he says, you know, we should let Ukraine defeat Russia. And I think we're going to see a mixed reception for Zelensky. I think the Western states will rightly embrace him. The others will do the opposite.
Yeah, it's astounding to me, too. But you have some divide here in the U.S., too, on that. I think there's just less and less faith in the U.N. can do things. I remembered when during the Iraq war leading up to it, there was a real effort. Let's win over the Security Council. Let's win over the world with our effort. Now it just seems almost to be de-emphasized, Hillel. Is that how you feel, or are you in the middle of it?
And no, I will agree with that. Look, the U.N. has been dysfunctional for decades. Certainly during the Cold War, it couldn't accomplish anything because there was the deadlock between the U.S. and Russia. And it's true, the 90s was a bit of an exceptional period because the Soviet Union fell and the new Russian government was somewhat democratic and not as evil. But Putin, in the past 20 years, progressively brought Russia back to its Soviet-level evil status and trying to recreate the Soviet empire. And the UN has been largely dysfunctional. I mean, again, when we expose abuses like the fact that the Islamic regime in Iran was named chair last October of the UN Human Rights Council Social Forum, not a single country spoke out to prevent it. So there is a culture at the UN of go along to get along. And I mean, our democracies, I mean, even the U.S., though on occasion they speak out, but even the U.S., certainly the Europeans, they don't want to say a thing when dictatorships hijack premier U.N. bodies, abusing the U.N. principles. Our group, U.N. Watch, we're speaking out for the U.N. Charter, which is a noble document speaking for freedom, human rights, peace, and justice. Sadly, it's the dictators who hijack these bodies, and they're the ones who right. claim to speak in the name of the UN, but in fact, they are twisting, perverting, and subverting the founding principles of that body.
So where the whole Iran-Israel war is heading, I think it's heading north. I think they're looking to contain Gaza to the best they can and go get Sinwar and their hostages back. But I do think they seem to be pivoting towards Hezbollah. I guess Lebanon does their is the face of the country, but Hezbollah is running the country. The humanitarian effort, I guess, to a degree, too. But I want you to hear what General Jack Keane said about the possibility of this war becoming a full-blown war in Lebanon. Cut 34.
They have moved one of their elite divisions out of Gaza into the operational area into the north. They have not mobilized reserves for that particular mission. If they were going to do a large-scale ground assault, which likely would need to be taken, they would use reserves. But they could start with a surprise tactical move with the forces they have. But certainly I think they're of the mindset that this operation has to be done. Why is that? Because Nasrallah is not going to stop attacking northern Israel. He started on October the 8th, and he's continuing it ever since. He is the leader of Hezbollah. And the reality is there's 70,000 Israelis that are displaced from their homes in northern Israel. And for them to go back to those homes, the Hezbollah military organizations have to move back across the Latani River, which is about 20 miles away from the border, so that they cannot bomb or reach those homes with right. rockets, with artillery, and with mortars. Now, others would say, well, just leave it as it is, Israel. Why start another war, open up another front to this war? Well, if they leave it as it is, then we're redefining the border of Israel.
There's a lot at stake. Israel can't exist. The status quo, not okay.
Look, I agree with everything that he said. Currently in northern Israel, Israel's sovereignty is under question because some 70,000 Israelis can't live in a large part of northern Israel. And no country can allow that to remain. Hezbollah is, in effect, occupying northern Israel. And let's keep in mind, the war began on October 8th in the north. Hezbollah, unprovoked, began a barrage of missiles that has been daily. One of their missiles famously killed 12 Druze children in Israel's Golan Heights. And their rockets are fired indiscriminately. They have 150,000 missiles that are aimed at Israeli population centers. They could cause incredible damage to Israeli civilians. So this is very serious business. The war has been going on since October 8th. It's been on a certain level of intense flame. The fear is that it could go to the next levels. But to a large degree, everyone in Israel understands that there is no choice. You know, the notion of de-escalation, you can say de-escalation, but when Japan attacks Pearl Harbor, you have to respond. Otherwise, you're not a country.
So exactly.
Israel does have to respond. It will have to push Hezbollah away. But we could be facing very dangerous times over there.
We are. Hillel Noyora, the executive director of the UN Watch, thanks so much. UN comes to town next week. When we come back, we open up the phones. 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. More to know. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen is the most recommended memory support brand by pharmacists.
Welcome back, everybody. We've got a few minutes until the top of the hour, so let's find out if you need to know more besides politics. Let's begin in sports. Dodgers got this home run hitter, Shohei Ohtani. He became the first player. Meanwhile, he's not playing the outfield. He's not pitching like he normally does. He's kind of having a rehab year in his elbow. Still, he joins the 50-50 club. Go.
On a 1-2, Ohtani sends one in the air. The other way. Back it goes. Gone! One-of-a-kind player. One-of-a-kind season. Shohei Ohtani starts
So
a lot
get
of people
the,
here standing. I'm sure you're standing up at home, leaning on the edge of your seat. 2-0 on Ohtani. Rubbing your hands together. Certainly smiling. We all are watching this guy. Oh, my gosh! Shohei Ohtani! The greatest day in baseball history!
Maybe. That's a little overstated, but he has over 50 stolen bases, 73 overall. He goes for 51 homers. He was 6-for-6 on the day as they, let me see. He's the closest anyone has come to the 50-50 mark Ronald Acuna. He had 73 bases, 41 homers. So that's about it. Congratulations to him. But while he's hurt, meanwhile, David Kohler, who's an expert on all this memorabilia stuff, told TMZ Sports that based on what he knows, the Ohtani ball that went for a home run is worth about $300,000. Imagine going to the game and catching that. Next, Elon Musk, a Neuralink brain chip, is going so well, he's received FDA breakthrough device status and could help blind people see again. The experimental device, given that certain medical devices provide treatment or diagnosis of life-threatening conditions, Musk says that at the start, the device will only be allowed very rudimentary vision, like Atari graphics, but the vision will improve, giving the blind vision blind. Vision sounds good, very good, too. But Elon Musk company's doing this. As writer Mike Solana put it, it's excited to learn how this is very evil, actually. Remember, everyone says it was bad to put it, and I thought it was kind of freaked me out. But putting chips in people's brains could also restore memory. Next, basketball. Caitlin Clark's first season finale is the most attended WNBA game of all time, capping off the historic season. 20,711 were in attendance to watch Clark and the Fever on the road in Washington at the Capital One Arena. It's amazing what's happened since she came out of college, and she's even been better than advertised. This is the craziest story. Ready? This Chinese zoo admit that the pandas you are looking at are nothing but painted dogs. And you got to see them. They look like painted dogs. Zoogoers in China have been felt outraged after discovering the so-called pandas they were cooing about are painted. The dupe visitors claim they only realized the scam at the Shanghai Zoo when one of the apparent pandas started panting and barking. Did you see the video of this?
I did. I really just encourage all of our listeners to Google this and look at the images in the video. It's hilarious.
It is. Yeah, it is unbelievable that they thought they could pull this off. It looks like a dog just painted.
Black and white. Where's PETA when you need them?
Right. And by the way, you know that pandas aren't even bears?
I mean, you just know that you don't like pandas.
I just think there's way too much emphasis on them. They don't want to procreate. We keep forcing them to. And when China gets mad at us, they ask for their pandas back.
Maybe.
Have you ever seen such temper tantrums?
That's fair, but maybe the pandas just need to hang around with P. Diddy more.
Absolutely. So that's a quick look, and now we know more. All right. Julie, listening to FM News Talk 97.1 in St. Louis. Hey, Julie.
Hey, Brian. Hey, I follow a lot of what's going on with voter registration. And in the swing states, I'm hearing that Georgia is not as mobilized as states like Pennsylvania. Do you know anything about this?
I know this. And, I know that everyone's got the respect of Governor Kemp. Governor Kemp's ground game delivered one of the most impressive victories anywhere in the country for Republicans, beating Stacey Abrams, who had an unbelievable ground game. So he said, I'm turning over all the keys to it to Trump. I'm surprised you're hearing that.
I am. I'm on X a lot. And Eric Erickson actually said it on Red State the other day that he is hurt hearing a lot of his viewers are being contacted by Democrats, but not Republicans. That was from earlier this week.
That would be scary because so far Trump is up by 1 or 2 points in most of the polls in Georgia. You're going to need Georgia to win. I think he's got Georgia and Arizona. He can reverse that back. And then he's got to work hard in Pennsylvania. I don't think Wisconsin, just when I thought Wisconsin was out of reach, then I see he's within 2 points in Wisconsin. And then Michigan, their uncommitted block, which is huge, said they're not endorsing Kamala Harris. They said, we're not endorsing Trump, we're not endorsing Kamala Harris. That's going to hurt in Michigan, because they're all Democrats.
News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Glad you're here. This hour, we're going to be joined by Shannon Bream. Don't ask me how I know. And Yuval David, celebrated an Emmy Award-winning actor, host, director. The latest on Israel. We almost come up on a year, believe it or not, since the horrendous attacks that rocked the Middle East. Has not recovered. We all know the problem. It's Iran. And until we get to the bottom of that, you got the Houthi rebels, Hamas, and Hezbollah. We're dancing on the outside. But what an explosive week this week in so many ways. We're also following two assassination investigations that are going way too slow, leaving way too many questions to be answered, while in the middle of one of the most intriguing presidential races ever. Besides that, I really don't know what I'm going to do for this hour. Big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
They have moved one of their elite divisions out of Gaza into the operational area into the north. They have not mobilized reserves for that particular mission. If they were going to do a large-scale ground assault, which likely would need to be taken, they would use reserves, but they could start with a surprise tactical move with the forces they have. But certainly, I think they're of the mindset that this operation has to be done.
I do, too. General Keane believes what many believe, that Israel has to take on Hezbollah because the status quo doesn't work and they're only going to get stronger. We'll discuss what has taken place this week and what took place last night.
Number two.
In San Diego, we had an exponential increase in significant interest aliens. These are aliens with significant ties to terrorism. At the time, I was told I could not release any information on this increase in SIAs. The administration was trying to convince the public there was no threat at the border.
That is the former Border Patrol agent exposed. Whistleblower reveals what we all knew. The administration is pushing Border Patrol not to record the breaching of our border by terrorists. Known terrorists. Just let them in. Don't say a word. Unacceptable. This should be the biggest story of the day.
Number one.
I'm a gun owner. Tim Walz is a gun.
I did not know that.
If somebody breaks in my house, they're getting shot. Sorry.
Yes, yes. I hear that. I hear that.
Probably should not have said that.
You know you should have said it. We don't even know if you have a gun, but I find it interesting that you do. Oprah sits down with the VP. An hour of drivel, 100% free of substance. Critics and supporters are demanding. She finds some way to have a real interview to explain her policies and her flip-flops. But I'm not sure that she thinks she has to. You know, I'm reading an interview with Brian Fallon. Brian Fallon used to run things for Obama, now got called in at the last minute to help her steer her campaign. And he just doesn't want her to make news, feels by not being Donald Trump, they can win. I'm not sure that's going to happen, because when you have polls that are this imprecise, when we don't have landlines anymore, when the only thing we know about the polls is that we can't count on them, and they're within 2 or 3 points in almost every battleground state, I would not hold the ball and run out the clock. Shannon Bream joins us now, Fox News Sunday, Fox News' chief legal analyst. Thankfully, we haven't needed your legal background in a while. But Shannon, welcome back.
It is great to see you. Well, not see you, but hear your delicious voice, Brian.
Wow, thank you. You're usually not in this good a mood. I'm surprised. Why are you in a good mood?
I love Fridays. Don't you love Fridays?
That's good, because we're closer
you
to your
show.
You
only have like 13 jobs left to go before your weekend.
I do. I cannot wait to work on the Friday show. But I want you to hear and listen. If this is you... You let people finish and be polite, but if you're not helping the guest by allowing them not to answer any questions, I want you to hear some of this. You know, Oprah, famous for a reason, can be great at her job when she wants to be. She wasn't last night. Cut to.
We really would love to know what your plan is to help lower the cost of living.
Yeah. First of all, thank you both for being here. And yours is a story I hear around the country as I travel. And in terms of both rightly having the right to have aspirations and dreams and ambitions for your family and working hard and finding that the American dream is, for this generation and so many recently, far more elusive than it's been. And we need to deal with that. And there are a number of ways. One is bringing down the cost of everyday necessities, including groceries. So that's why I'm taking on, for example, price gouging, which is when...
Okay, I can't listen anymore. So that was 45 seconds before she got to price gouging. And there's no proof of any gouging. And, of course, the normal follow-up is, why aren't you doing it now? Oh, Biden's pro-gouging, so I had to keep my mouth shut. So this went on and on and on, and the whole wind-up to answering a question. And but she's reaching for the answer. There's a difference between preamble, trying to explain yourself, and scrambling for an answer. This is unbelievable to me, Shannon. No interviews, lay up questions from audiences that she doesn't answer, and we're in a tie.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing. As bad as the Harris-Waltz side of the ticket tells us that Trump is, then if that's the case, why are they in a tie with him? I mean, the two sides are really talking past each other, as they do with campaigns. But I'm glad that you kind of broke down what the Oprah thing was last night. I mean, it wasn't an interview.
It wasn't.
Because we heard Oprah speak at the DNC. She's a very gifted communicator. She had already endorsed the vice president. And clearly this was a pep rally. You have all the celebrities show up. There's a fundraising component. You know, I mean, I'm assuming that most of the people on this call already know they're going to vote for the Harris-Waltz ticket. So these should have been layups. But you probably noticed there were times when Oprah seemed to be sort of helping her get to the point, or like, okay, so bottom line, what you're saying is, after a rambling answer. So, you know, I mean, there's an awareness that, you know, she's not going to dig too deep on policy. I don't know if it's that she's unwilling or unable, because she doesn't want to articulate a lot of what people want to hear from her, like details.
How do you think Joe Biden feels when you heard this from Hillary Clinton? Cut eight.
I did wonder how I would feel when, you know, first President Biden withdrew, endorsed the vice president. My husband and I quickly endorsed her. And I felt excited, exhilarated.
Yeah.
I was literally thrilled. And it was in large measure because I know her and I've been involved with her since she has been vice president. Her sister worked for me in 2016. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. So thank you. I'm exhilarated, Joe, that you're stepping down. To her credit, she waited to the last minute to do it. But how could you feel exhilarated? Her approval rating was 32% before she was launched into the number one slot. And everyone wants to have short-term memory loss, and they don't have the option of getting Prevagen to the entire country. So what are we? I just feel like I'm in a surreal world where somebody who got no votes and doesn't answer any questions will become president. I would put this on HBO, but it's not plausible enough.
Well, nothing that's happened this year would make it past the smell test. If you're going to try to script a show, they'd be like, no, that's so fantastical and crazy because of everything that's happened this year. But what else can Democrats do? There was obviously very quickly a decision, okay, it's going to be the vice president. We're going to coalesce around her. So, of course, they're all going to say that they're excited. I sneakily think that the former Secretary of State, who herself ran for president in 2016, I think there's going to be some part of her that still wishes it was her. You know, I mean, that was an ambition. She wanted to be the first woman. She wanted to break that glass ceiling. And so I wouldn't be surprised if she had some of those feelings. But what else are Democrats going to say? I mean, there's a lot of chatter about, you know, it was an Axios. The piece is like, the idea is just to hide until the election day. Listen, I live in Virginia. We started voting today. So people are already casting their votes. And the longer you can go without having to get into the nitty gritty of policy, the better, because you're either going to have to say, I'm part of this administration that didn't get it right. Here's where I break with the president. Here's how I would do things differently. So it wasn't great for 4 years, or I completely embrace that. And so even though you think we did a terrible job in the economy, which our latest Fox News polling shows, it's going to be somehow different under me. I mean, it's if she drills down on details and policy, she's going to have to make that fork in the road.
So I want you to hear President Trump is creating controversy. Not for me. He says basically he can't believe that every Jewish American is not voting for him. Cut 15.
Honestly, you didn't treat yourselves well. You didn't. It was a terrible thing. And what made me even more upset about it is the current polling has just been announced. Now, I just announced the polls for, and I'm now polling at about 40%. That means 60% of Jewish people are going to vote for Kamala or a Democrat. And honestly, you ought to have your heads examined.
So, yeah, some people thought that was a little too tough love on his part. But, you know, you've had guests. We've all had guests on our shows that have talked about the fact that they were lifelong Democrats and they're feeling rattled because they feel like in the middle of these anti-Semitic protests on campuses and in big cities – that they don't feel like the Democrat Party has been the ally that they thought they were in the past. You're hearing that especially from young people on these campuses who have had to go face-to-face with people, they say, acting in a very threatening manner and calling for the annihilation of Israel, and they thought that Democrats should be more full-throated in stepping up against that. But we know this has been a really difficult issue for the Democrats, for the vice president, who's tried to, you know, say, listen, I have zero reservations about Israel doing everything they can to defend themselves. I will defend their ability to defend themselves. But at the same time, there have been decisions with regard to arms and weapons and limits on those, you know, going to Israel, that have been of concern to people who are Israel's allies.
I just don't understand. People say it's an anti-Semitic trope. No, it's Donald Trump saying, I deserve the Jewish vote. You saw what I did. We're moving the, you know, recognizing the Golan Heights, the Abraham Accords, and then moving the embassy. The friendship with Netanyahu made a peace closer than ever, cracking down on Iran. What else do I have to do for you? That's what he's saying. I don't think he knows enough to do an anti-Semitic trope. All he knows is Jared Kushner was his key advisor for 4 years. That's a weird way to be anti-Semitic. Lastly, as far as the topic before we get to your show, Mark Robinson, Pornhub, not usually a good combination. Has he been effective in pushing back that it was not him?
I don't know. I mean, when you look at the allegations linking him to, you know, different emails and different servers and these things, that he's got a lot to prove to the people of North Carolina that this indeed was not him. And that's what he says. And he says this is a hit job. The timing always raises questions because, you know, yesterday was the day that if you were going to get off the North Carolina ballot, you had to decide that before midnight. And that's the day the story drops. He digs in his heels, says it's not me, I'm not going anywhere. But he's hurting in the polls. And North Carolina should not be for the Trump team in play as much as it is, and I think this is of concern to them, that the down ballot stuff can actually hurt up ballot too. And they don't want North Carolina to be in play, but a lot of recent polling shows it is, and the Mark Robinson situation does not help the Trump fans ticket.
It's interesting because he praises Mark Robinson, and he says Martin Luther King Jr. on steroids and the shots together. I'm already watching because I'm busy now on radio, but I'm watching how many times the two of them pop up on other networks.
And President Trump has been very supportive of him in the past, I mean, and has championed him. But now what we're hearing behind the scenes is that they don't want him showing up at the Trump events in North Carolina moving forward.
Well, I would think that's a good adjustment. Good audible. All right. So, Shannon, who's on your show?
Well, we are going to have members of the House Bipartisan Task Force looking into the assassination attempts. We've got Mike Waltz and Madeline Dean with us. They say it's very important to present this united front, bipartisan front. We'll see what they have to say after we hear from the acting director of Secret Service today, what they're going to preview in their hearing, what kind of witnesses are they going to have, who's going to be held accountable. So we'll talk to them. We've also got Governor Doug Burgum with us. He's been busy on the campaign trail. And our D guest is about to be announced. I'll put it on social as soon as we can lock him in.
Really? You're not going to break it here?
Yeah. Well, I could, but then if we think they're 95% there, and I don't want to be the 5% that blows it up because they haven't given us a go-ahead yet. But
oh, no, you got to do the right thing. You got to.
Can I tell you one more thing?
Yes.
We do this very, very cool new museum that's opening up across the street from the White House here. It is so high tech and amazing. You get to sit like in the cabinet room with JFK and advise him as he is sitting there in a hologram form asking your opinions on things like the Cuban Missile Crisis. It is the most interactive, coolest place in D.C. Kids will love it. Adults will love it. And we'll take you behind the scenes.
Oh, that'll be great. I love that stuff.
Neat.
Yeah. Another reason to come to Washington. Another reason to watch your show.
I'll personally take you on a tour if you come.
Now, do you want to know who's on One Nation?
I always want to know.
Okay. Robert Davi will talk about Hollywood weighing in on one side of the aisle and how they somehow feel forced to, perhaps. Who does that help? We'll also notice that Taylor Swift now has a lower approval rating than President Trump. Will that hurt her sales? Will she run out of money? Those are the big questions.
I doubt it. I think she's got a printing press.
Don't give the answer away. These are teasers.
I'm just saying, these are my doubts.
Okay. Also, we're going to look at what went wrong in the media this week with Pete Hegseth. And we're going to lead with, look inside AI. This is very cerebral. Mm-hmm. This is something I could see on Fox News Sunday. Inside AI with Tristan Harris tells us some of the dangers, some of the advances, how much advances we've made in just 2 years. Relatively scary and enticing. And then we open up with President Trump. I did 12 minutes with him in Uniondale. So we'll open up with that.
That's a star-packed lineup, and I know I'll use it as show prep for Sunday, so you don't want to miss that Saturday night.
If I see a clip on your show, there'll be no charge, because we're friends.
I appreciate that. Let's keep it in the family. And by the way, we're working on a Fox News Sunday one-hour special on AI, so that's coming up, too.
If I could help you with that, because not just me as an expert, I have two great guests for you.
I've already booked the Brian Kilmeade hologram.
Do I get paid for
we're
that?
We're going to co-host the show. You
right.
didn't know that?
All right.
I didn't even have to ask you.
And listen,
your AI is going to do it with
now,
me.
Now, this is something to think about as we go to break. If Donald Trump's against president and you have me as a hologram on Sunday, mm-hmm. that's overtime. Will I be taxed on that?
I don't know. According to President Trump, no.
All right.
But I might have to pay your hologram separately.
Oh.
You know, these AIs are going to have their own brains and their own bank accounts. That AI might want to go on vacation or do something with some pocket change that I could throw their way.
What could go wrong? I just can't.
Not a thing.
I'm starting to think the future sucks.
Time for nap.
That's a little general. Shannon Bream, thank you. America, thanks you. Watch Fox News Sunday. Back in a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What's your most important issue?
The economy. Getting the interest rates down. Getting it to where we can afford to live in America.
But, you know, if you can afford a boat, you're not hurting so bad, right?
Listen, nobody gave me I earned everything that I've got. I'm retired military, retired power plant.
I think it's interesting that people who are a little bit more comfortable are still so concerned about the economy.
That is a CNN reporter supposed to go to a boat parade in Panama City, Florida. And instead of just trying to find out what the complaint is, who you're voting for and why, she's challenging the guy that you're not really economically distressed. A couple of things. I don't know if he is. He's just picture this. He's got a boat. He's got no shirt on, hanging out on the beach. He's about 65, 70, something like that. That's my hunch. If you are okay, that doesn't mean that you're not caring about the mechanic down the street, your kids that you may have trying to make their way through, trying to pay for college. You have no idea. Someone might be well on a fixed income. They see the price of goods going up. They realize they got to tighten their belt after working for 35 years. And then they worry about the next generation coming up behind them, or they care about their grandparents or their parents. I mean, who are you to sit there and go, well, you got a boat. What are you worried about? Vote Harris. Really? Okay, so I just pay more for everything because somebody wants to spend $7 trillion on stuff I'm not interested in, on new Green Deal stuff that you masqueraded as Inflation Reduction Act, that you want to do infrastructure and not build anything, that you want to do a rescue plan after President Trump already put money in and the economy is already turning around. All this stuff, massive spending, three in a row, $7 trillion, $7 trillion right before, right as we come out of the pandemic. You reconfigured the economy and thought, wow, we're coming up. This is going to be great. So people had some money, but when they came out of it, a lot of them didn't have jobs. And now you have a CNN reporter out in the boat parade trying to tell people they have no business complaining. Good luck with that. Is that reporting? I don't know. I mean, if you send a host out there that has an opinion, then I get it. I want to go out and meet the people that instead of calling me, I want to go do it. But if you're a reporter just reporting at a boat parade, I don't think you should challenge people's income. Maybe I'm wrong. Let's see. 1-866-408-7669.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And I've said long and loud, anybody, and especially over the last few years, anybody who's Jewish and loves being Jewish and loves Israel is a fool if they vote for a Democrat.
That is Donald Trump. People say, well, that's those are anti-Semitic tropes. No, it's Donald Trump saying, are you kidding me? I turned over the Golan Heights. I moved the embassy. I am loyal to Israel. I pushed forward the Abraham Accord, closer to a massive peace than ever before in Israeli history. And then you watch the insubordination that Joe Biden has subtly done over the last year since October 7th. Of course you should vote for me. He's frustrated. But is it anti-Semitic to say to the Jewish people in America, vote for me? Yuval David's here, celebrated Emmy Award-winning actor, host, director, and filmmaker, who has won over 100 international film festival awards, now spending a lot of time fighting against anti-Semitism here in America and abroad. Yuval, welcome back.
It's always good to be back. It's good to see you. Good to be in studio with you, my friend.
Great. I know you're doing a lot of great work. What's your thought about, if you were in the audience, you're Jewish.
I am Jewish.
You're in the audience, and Donald Trump said that. How do you feel?
Why shouldn't he say that? This is a campaign. He wants the votes. How is his saying vote for me anti-Semitic?
I agree.
What else do I have to say beyond that?
Nothing. I just watch other channels, and they said, right. Well, that's anti-Semitic. Those are tropes that in the Jewish world is going to be taken the wrong way.
Well, Brian, you just shared all kinds of details about what Trump has done for the Jewish people, what Trump has done for Israel. And in that same speech that you grabbed a clip from, he was condemning the anti-Semitism. He was condemning the anti-Semitism on campuses. He was condemning the anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish racist protests that we're seeing that are masked by being called pro-Palestinian. I'm sorry, they're not pro-Palestinian if they're going outside Jewish businesses, Jewish schools, Jewish synagogues. There are Jewish business owners who've had to take the names of their companies off of the buildings in order to protect people who work there. They're just Jewish American-owned businesses.
How bad are the colleges?
The colleges got worse this semester. We saw the encampments last semester, and that was an explosion that was brewing from a groundswell.
Funded overseas?
Funded overseas. Look at the billions of dollars that have come in to campuses from Qatar. What is it? $2 billion of Qatari money from the Qatar Foundation went to Cornell alone? These are billions of dollars that are going into the universities, not to slap up buildings and put their names on it, like we see so many philanthropists have, you know, so-and-so's wing of whatever department. They've been filling them with professors. They've been filling them with scholarship students and saying to the universities, if you want our money, we want X amount of students to come to this university. And those students are then doing the indoctrination of the useful idiots who are on campus.
Right. They should be embarrassed. Where was this whole mission before October 7th?
This mission was going on for
years. This is a complicated thing. But I never saw these students take an active attack at Israel like this. Have you?
I did. I've been Queers for Palestine has been coming for me since 2018. Only recently are people talking about Queers for Palestine. I've been an LGBT.
Is there a dumber organization? Do you know what the Palestinians think about gay people?
Yes, I do, because I've helped rescue or I've helped try to rescue unsuccessfully. LGBTQ people, primarily lesbian and gay people, out of Palestinian territories. If you're homosexual in the Palestinian territories, not only would you get thrown off of a building, but gay men get raped as a punishment for being gay. So let's talk about the mind twisting there. They punish them by having gay sex with them, and then they kill them. Right. Women get forced into sex slavery or forced to marry the undesirable men. So any LGBTQ person who's supporting resistance by any means necessary and quoting these ridiculous nursery rhyme statements isn't an LGBTQ activist.
So here's what Trump would do about that. Cut 14.
And to confront the crisis of anti-Semitism at our universities, I will tell college presidents that they must end the anti-Semitic propaganda, or they will lose their accreditation and they will lose all federal support.
What do you think?
Thank you for saying that. Why don't we hear those same statements from the Democratic Party? When I was watching and really listening closely to all of the speeches at the DNC, Kamala Harris, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kamala Harris was the only politician who said the word Israel. Biden said the people out there protesting outside the DNC have a point. As they're calling for death to America. So as an American Jew born in this country who loves the values and the democracy that we have here, I need to feel protected. When he says that, I feel protected.
So what he says, he'd be the best answer for Israel, and that Harris is going to be worse than Biden. Cut 16.
I'm calling on Kamala Harris to officially disavow the support of all Hamas sympathizers, anti-Semites, Israel haters on college campuses and everywhere else.
You think she will?
Well, we've been seeing a lot of problems within our own Democratic Party. Where how is it that the squad has been allowed to thrive? That Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, Rashida Tlaib are saying things that are racist, anti-Jewish racist statements. They need to be condemned. So the Democratic Party needs to get their act together. I was going to use a different word.
Right. Right now, all they talk about is a ceasefire. We're talking to Yuval David. Yuval, the only one is a ceasefire. What about what is involved in that ceasefire? It's got to be a ceasefire that ends up in some type of end that allows Israel to be safe. If Correct. You just end it, stop arms and let everybody out, the hostages back and the prisoners out,
You've just put off the next attack maybe 9 months.
Correct.
And then we're going to be right back here again and go, how did this happen?
Well, how lovely to hear you explain it that way. Most people think, oh, the way to end war is just to have this ceasefire, to just stop fighting. The only way to achieve peace is with war. Hamas continues to declare that they want to eradicate Israel and they want to kill Jews. Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Hezbollah have said the same exact things. So when the people are calling for ceasefire, including in the Hollywood industry, saying that Israel needs to stop fighting, how can Israel stop fighting? Are we supposed to get punched on one side of the face, then turn our face the other direction to get punched again? It doesn't make sense.
How many times have you been to Israel?
I've been to, since October 7th, I probably go there every 2 months. So I'm in Israel a lot.
So how dangerous is the northern border?
The north, it's very sad. Anybody who's been in the north before October 7th, now the north is unrecognizable. The amount of people who've had to evacuate and flee their homes in the north of Israel, including Jewish Israelis, Muslim Israelis, Christian Israelis, Druze Israelis, Baha'i, there are so many different people who live up there. They've had to flee for safety. The wine country has destroyed. Forests have been burnt down. The environmental disaster that's been caused by Hamas rockets. There are so many horrendous things that are happening.
For them to pull off the beeper bombs and then the walkie-talkie bombs and the solar panel bombs.
Amazing.
Going right to Hezbollah.
Amazing. Amazing operation.
Getting the terrorists while leaving civilians for the most part. You lost about 50 terrorists. Over 4,000 wounded in some way, shape, or form off the battlefield, at least for now. But I want you to hear how AOC responded to this.
Currently, U.S. Department of Defense guidelines actually explicitly prohibits the use of booby traps, and they define booby traps as non-combatant devices, cell phones, things like that, being used and have explosives hidden in them. There are rules of war. And just because war engages doesn't mean that we abandon the rules of war.
So do you feel smarter having heard that? Were you anti-booby trap? I think Netanyahu defying the booby trap law really goes too far.
What does AOC know about warfare? I mean, she keeps speaking about her rise into the political space from being a waitress or a bartender.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. That's amazing. But what does she actually know about war? Does she think that war happens when two people shake their hands, step into a ring and say, okay, now we're going to fight and have a judge next to us? Hezbollah does not fight according to rules of war. Hezbollah kills and maims people indiscriminately. What did AOC say when the 12 Druze Israeli children were killed while playing soccer?
Nothing.
But yet Israel has a covert operation to explode the pagers and the walkie-talkies that are specifically being used by Hezbollah terrorists, and she condemns Israel for that? That makes me feel unsafe as an American to know that a political leader says stuff like that.
Yuval, lastly, before you go, just a thought. The people are looking at this and saying, why would Israel want to engage in a northern front when they're not done with Hamas yet? I believe that this is the moment that the longer they wait, the more powerful Hezbollah will be. And if they cannot capitalize on this moment on a war footing, as stressful as it is, they're only punting a couple of years from now on a more formidable opponent who, as of their brilliant operation, might be more off kilter than any time since their creation.
Absolutely. There is no choice but to fight. Israel is being attacked on the northern border by Hezbollah. Israel is being attacked in the south by Hamas. Israel is being attacked by the head of the snake, Iran, that is trying to fund and activate proxies, which, by the way, are in this country as well. So we are going to see, this is my fear as an American, we're going to see what we've been noticing happening across Europe with the Islamization of the world. It's the current day crusades. Israel has wars on multiple fronts, and it has to fight all of them. Now's the time.
I would think so. And you know who also recognizes it? Saudi Arabia.
Absolutely.
Saudi Arabia is trying to industrialize with all their problems. They got problems. They are looking just to... They were en route to making peace with Israel because they want to trade. They want to trade. They want an innovation. War does not pay off. So they were looking to set up things with Israel, trade deals with the UK, and this stopped everything in its tracks, which means Iran accomplished its goal. But let's make sure it doesn't end the way they want it.
Yuval, David, thanks so much for coming in.
Always a pleasure.
All right, we wrap it up in just a moment. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade.
It's Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
To know if you think it's time for Democrats to stop calling Trump a threat to democracy.
No, the fact of the matter is that he is a threat to democracy.
No, I think we should be clear that he is a threat to democracy.
I think that the rhetoric, though, needs to be toned down.
I think his rhetoric should be toned down, absolutely.
Listen, these are the facts. He is a threat, period, point blank.
So there you go. Threat to democracy. Don't let two assassinations stop you from saying things that aren't true, that will only electrify people and ignite the mentally unbalanced, like the two people we know too little about, but one looks more bizarre than the next, who are now, one's a dead assassin, one's a jailed assassin. But let's not pull back in the House of Representatives. That was our great reporter walking around Capitol Hill trying to find out if people are going to ratchet down the language. Now, after the first assassination, they felt kind of bad. Second one, didn't take him any time to say, yeah, Donald Trump was shot. Glad he survived. It's his fault. And now you have people, no, I'm going to still call him a threat to democracy on January 6th. Okay, that was 4 years ago. If that's all you got, and if something happened where you give a speech and you have a trial and you have an impeachment and all those things, and he still wins the nomination, you throw four trials at him, and he still continues to soar, you switch candidates on him, and he's in a dead heat still, and then after two assassination attempts, you still won't sober up to understand that that type of idiocy makes moderates, makes independents go, these people are so whacked out or so involved in politics, they don't understand humanity, in my view. And to me, we know so little about these assassins. This kid on top of the roof wearing camouflage on a steel roof, bizarre, able to pull off the shot. We can debate that another time. I want to know this. Who is he? What happened to his encrypted apps? Where are his parents? Where are his family? Where are his friends? Where are his enemies? Why do we know nothing about him? Why did you rush to cremate him? Seriously, an autopsy first? Who shot him? Who was the first one to get him? Did he get any shots off? I mean, he blew a guy's head off. One of a great American, a fire chief, a family man, young kids, dead, burn his body. Let's get rid of him. Who was he talking to? Why was he on that Blackstone video, BlackRock video? And then we watch this other guy, pink shirt, standing by a fence since 2 a.m. No one notices him. Been to Ukraine, has no money. Horse in the house, flies to Hawaii, has a girlfriend. See this guy? How's he get a girlfriend? All his teeth are stacked together. He weighs about 80 pounds. He looks like he's on something. Doesn't take a shower. Gets a girlfriend, and they go off to Hawaii to build low-income houses. Then he loses his job. I don't know how. They run out of low-income houses. Then he goes, let me go to Ukraine. Who's paying for this? Why aren't investigators as curious as us? What would it hurt the FBI to say, right now, we're pursuing two assailants? Let me tell you what's stumping us on the first one. Let me tell you where we're at in the second one. Here's what I know. There's nothing you have to keep from us. What, are we not old enough to understand? It's just crazy. So back to the election. I'm just amazed at how Democrats don't understand that there was an opportunity when the current president and the vice president called President Trump to come out. And let's just make this 45 days, 46 days about the issues. And believe it, it would work well for Trump, too. Not many people are convinced that there's not going to be another shot at him. Let's go to the phones. Shawnee, listening in New York City. Hey, Shawnee.
Oh, Shawnee here. I'm so grateful and surprised to get through to you. I watch you all the time.
Thank you. I agree
with everything you say and do. I can't believe what a Trump supporter I am. He has the hand of God on him. But I called to say that my husband works very hard, 7 days a week. He's 87. And at one point, we had two kids in college, and my parents, both of them, were financially distressed. So we were in full support of them. And regardless of the fact that we were comfortable, it was really challenging. So who the heck is this liberal CNN girl to go around counting anybody else's money?
So what you're referring to is a Panama City shoot of a boat parade for Trump, where the, she wanted to go out. Instead of just reporting what brings you out there, what motivates you, why are you out there, they said, well, you got a boat. How bad can things be? As if you have money, you're not worried about the next generation, your friends next door. And do you, if most people who have money don't enjoy throwing it away, or else they'd be at the casino every day. So all of a sudden, as a woman told me, and you'll see it on One Nation over the weekend, I went in the stands and I said, why are you here? Why are you supporting Trump? She said, mayonnaise. What are you talking about? She goes, my mayonnaise was $2.75. Now it's $7. And I said, that got me, got my attention. My income hasn't changed. So is she out of money? No, she looked fine. Looked like she was wearing a business suit. Not out of money. But you just don't want to throw money away. You know it doesn't have to be this way. And then if you just say, well, we're coming out of the pandemic, Kamala Harris says he left us a mess. Left us a mess. Thanks for the call, by the way, Shawnee. Left us a mess. What are you talking about, left us a mess? Get you a vaccine, a million shots already in arms. All that money was already in the system to giving people money not to work. You were starting everything up. You had to get people back in school. You had to get the PPE was all done, already flowing. Instead, you went and did the rescue package that Larry Summers told you not to do, then the infrastructure package, and then you did another package, the Inflation Reduction Act, which increased inflation. Then say, well, those are the circumstances. No, that's not the circumstances. You didn't have to jam that debt down everyone's throat and devalue the dollar to the point where inflation went up to 9%. It hasn't gone down. It's going up slower, but it doesn't mean it ever came down. So I think there's a huge difference. So much to go over. It's going to be an intense weekend, too. Please watch me on One Nation. My interview, you have not heard any of it. 12 minutes with Donald Trump to start off. Robert Davi brings us inside Hollywood's decision to once again endorse somebody that's that they know almost nothing about, Kamala Harris, as well as Tristan Harris talking about what's happening with AI, brings us to a level we never thought possible, and Pete Hegseth.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.